Hello, and welcome to 15 Minute History. This season is about villains, the signs of their rise to power, and the steps heroes take to defeat them. If this is your first time here, we're glad to have you. Stay connected with us at our website, 15minutehistorypodcast.org, for transcripts, older episodes, or to get in touch with us. We love hearing from you, so please send us questions and comments. Now, let's start the show.
I am not going to lose Vietnam. I am not going to be the president who saw Southeast Asia go the way China went. Lyndon Baines Johnson. You can kill 10 of my men for every one I kill of yours, but even at those odds, you will lose and I will win. Ho Chi Minh.
The horizon grew brighter. Set against the rising smoke, the sun looked almost artificial. Ahead, he could see the outlines of bodies set against piles of dirt and craters from mortar shells. Through the binoculars, he could still see movement beyond the horizon, but it was getting smaller before vanishing into the line of jungle. He waited for the sun to rise, burning away the morning fog and leaving a clear line of sight on the tree line before he sent his men out into the field. The next several hours was an endless scouring of the killing field in front of them. His men searched the bodies that were still intact for intelligence or other pieces of information. Massive holes were dug to accommodate the graves required for the bodies of the Viet Cong and North Vietnamese soldiers. Construction equipment was used to push the corpses into the holes before earth was pushed over them. He had seen something like this only a few times before. Around midday, a major addressed him with a salute and provided a pile of contraband found on the bodies. He took it and watched the man head back out into the field while issuing orders to pull new wire and plant additional claymores and other explosives. The cleanup was over. It was time to prepare again. On top of the pile of papers and photos was a typed note. He unfolded it and read it aloud to himself. "Remember, we cannot defeat the Americans on the battlefield. We must defeat them at home. We will defeat them by turning their own people against them and make them eat themselves. When you fight, remember that you fight until the Americans are forced to surrender." The lieutenant colonel looked up from the paper as his men prepared the field again for the coming fight and said nothing. As we look at villains in history, we want to look at the actions and their effects. The policies of Lyndon Baines Johnson and Ho Chi Minh were the reflection of two leaders operating in different contexts. Though the method by which they exercised their intentions was different, the root of their why is in question. In this episode, we want to look at both the intention and result from each leader by comparing policies during their tenure. The context of culture may require different methods for enacting said policy, but the intentions and subsequent outcomes show the result. For example, Johnson used the American process to send men to war, while Ho Chi Minh created his own processes for doing the same. What are the differences between such actions, regardless of the method used? We examine that today. Foreign policies. This, characterized by the Vietnam War, is the most direct comparison and possibly the most destructive for both leaders. One sought to subjugate a country through Marxist totalitarianism using force, genocide, and the consolidation of power. The other used any means necessary to increase political power through a conflict due to pride and ego. In both cases, innocence paid the price. Before Lyndon Johnson's landslide election, he had worked with John F. Kennedy to manage the growing support from the U.S. government to the government of South Vietnam. This was due to the growing insurgency from the communists in the north, led by Ho Chi Minh, taking control of that part of the country. Once president, Johnson sought to escalate U.S. involvement to offset the domino effect in the region, where it was believed that one area falling to communism, which would lead to other areas following suit. The president accomplished this by working with the CIA and other intelligence agencies to stage the Gulf of Tonkin incident, where it was reported that U.S. destroyers were attacked by the North Vietnamese. What was true about the incident was that the USS Maddox was targeted by North Vietnamese torpedo boats on August 2, 1964. In this attack, there was no damage to the Maddox, and no American sailor was hurt. What was untrue was the second attack, which never happened. The false report of the second attack was used by Johnson and the U.S. government to grant the president unilateral power to commit whatever resources he saw fit to the war without congressional approval. As a result, Johnson pushed for a full deployment of American servicemen to Vietnam to ensure that the communist North was stopped. Over the next 6 years, American forces rose from around 16,000 to over 500,000. Service members were ordered to carry out military strategies that came from politicians in Washington rather than the commanders in the field. Those that survived were ridiculed, forever scarred, and forgotten. The primary goal for Ho Chi Minh was to reunify Vietnam under communist rule. He did this through force, bloodshed, and barbarism. Financed by communist allies such as the Soviet Union and China, Ho resisted and defeated the French occupation at the Battle of Dien Bien Phu in 1954. The United States had been sending advisors to aid the French since 1950 and began increasing their military presence soon after the departure of the French to ensure that the South Vietnamese government could withstand the coming communist onslaught. Ho consolidated power as a result of the French surrender, but always kept his eyes on South Vietnam as his final goal. In the North, Ho created the North Vietnamese Army, instituted Marxist principles of land sharing and other policies while recruiting the disenfranchised people who were tired of the corruption of the South Vietnamese government. Those who stood against him were murdered. Entire regions were liquidated of all people. Villages were massacred and bodies deposited in mass graves. One of the most infamous massacres occurred at Hue City during the Tet Offensive of 1968, where Ho's NVA and Viet Cong forces slaughtered hundreds of citizens they believe had helped the South Vietnamese government. It was only after American forces retook the city where the mass graves found. As the conflict grew, so did U.S. involvement, to the point that the United States clashed directly with Ho's forces, winning all engagements, but losing the war due to U.S. corruption and lack of competent military management. Domestic and social policies. Each leader focused on the domestic policies in line with their culture and desired outcome, using the rules established within the confines of the rule of law or the law they desired to make. The cornerstone of Johnson's domestic policy was his Great Society programs. These included the War on Poverty and Urban Renewal, and became the basis for ongoing programs such as Medicaid and Medicare. In addition, he was an advocate for and the signer of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965, both of which solidified the rights of African Americans across the country. Though he signed these important laws, historians have argued about his real reason for doing so. The country was changing, and there is the belief that Johnson pushed these forward as a result of such change. Privately, Johnson used derogatory, racist language towards minorities. In addition, the majority of Democrats, mostly from the South, had to be talked into supporting the bill for political reasons. Had it not been for Republicans, the bills would not have passed, a fact noted by Johnson himself. In addition to his racist private views, Johnson's Great Society programs have caused innumerable problems that are still being felt today. The War on Poverty set societal expectations for ongoing government support, encouraging dependency while doing very little to actually combat poverty. Some historians have disputed these criticisms and have written that the War on Poverty, though it had flaws, did in fact help alleviate the suffering of many impoverished Americans. Ho's approach to domestic policy was obviously very different and in context reflective of his ongoing war with the occupying French and Americans. After World War II, Ho founded the Communist Party and took control of Hanoi in 1945. Subsequent reforms were instituted to enforce his Marxist ideology. Here, things take a bad turn. His policies aimed at land redistribution meant the displacement and general widespread genocide of farmers and families. To put this in perspective, consider this as you sit in your home or car. You have finished working for the day and sitting down to dinner begin to talk with your family. Imagine for a moment your children laughing at something that happened that day, or someone telling a joke that makes you smile. After dinner, everyone goes their way to do what they want before getting ready for bed and turning in for the night. Suddenly, you and your family are awakened by soldiers breaking down your door. You are dragged out by your hair as you watch your children thrown to the ground. Before you can even realize what is happening, you watch your children and other family members stabbed to death. As they lay there, bleeding out on the ground and weeping silently from the pain and fear, the communists come to you. Your bodies are thrown into a mass unmarked grave, and the property is reallocated for the government. Your pictures are stripped from the walls. Your belongings are collected and redistributed. All that made you who you were is completely erased. At some point in the future, your empty home is given to a loyal family who will obey and serve the communists well. This was a cornerstone of Ho's reforms. Some historians have sought to mask such atrocity of how Ho worked to improve literacy rates, gender equality, and healthcare for the population. While some of this may be true, nothing good outweighs the absolute horror rendered by Ho and his forces. Even today, mass graves of bodies are still being found. Some American veterans have spoken about the atrocities they saw and tried to prevent, even as the last American chopper left the embassy in 1975, before the Red Curtain closed around the country completely. Standing Against Evil. In contrasting Lyndon Johnson and Ho Chi Minh, it may seem easy to say that there is no comparison. After all, Johnson did not commit any atrocities or order them. He also enacted legislation that ensured rights for minorities and sought to solve societal issues for America. While that is true, it would be historically irresponsible to ignore the many bad decisions of Johnson. Moreover, it is horrendous to dismiss the atrocities committed by Ho in order to highlight whatever perceived good he may have done. When standing against evil, it is important to observe evil for what it is in whatever context. It was evil of Johnson to falsify the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Doing so escalated the war. It was also evil for Ho to continually be allowed to commit his atrocities. So what was the answer? Unfortunately, given the actions that were taken in the context of the time, we will never know. Evil actions can take many forms. Some are worse than others and may seem to negate the rest. This, however, is a fallacy. Johnson's actions to start the war were evil. Ho's atrocities were more evil. One does not negate the other, and both are true. In the context of history, we must be careful not to appropriate justifications when we compare the actions of people. It is possible for one atrocity to be worse than the other, and both still be wrong. When we see choices made in history for the purposes of elevating a person, bad results are inevitable. In contrast, when honest actions are applied to free the person, there is a history of actual solutions which arise. The choice of enacting such solutions becomes yet another distinction between the evil ambition and the righteous sacrifice. As we look to history, we must be honest about what is there. Through this honesty, we will be better equipped to understand evil in whatever context and be part of the force that pushes against it. Thank you for joining us on 15 Minute History. Please take a moment to send us any questions about this topic and leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast. It really does help. You can also partner with us by going to our website, clicking the support button, and donating now. We hope you will keep joining us this season as we walk in history's footsteps, 15 minutes at a time.